Main menu.
Main menu.
Main menu.
Main menu.
Hello, I'm Jonathan Mose, and welcome to Main Menu, your weekly two-hour look at technology from a blindness perspective. It's produced and broadcast on ACB Radio, and also made available to radio information services around the world. And there's only one story today on Main Menu as we salute a blindness technology legend. Willie Wilson, the sysop of the BlinkLink bulletin board and moderator of the BlinkTalk FidoNet Echo, died 2 weeks ago. There are many more blind computer users now than there were when BlinkLink and BlinkTalk were in their prime. But even for them, this is an inspiring story of how we've moved forward on our journey to various blind communities becoming a blind global village. Of course, the discussions we're about to have will bring back memories of all that software we used to use. BBS packages like Maximus, Wildcat, PC Board, Opus, QBBS, RBBS, Remote Access, Teleguard, Searchlight and others, the BBS door games we used to play for hour after hour, such as Trade Wars, Card Sharks, Leech and many, many more. The way we used to download mail using offline mail readers like Silver Express, Blue Wave, Easy Reader, Silly Little Mail Reader, Offline Express and others. We hope you'll share those memories when you phone in, because Willie would want us to have a chat about the old times as we remember him. But let's also not forget that without the vision and the talent to apply the technology itself is meaningless and empty. The reason that Willie is so significant, and why this Main Menu show is dedicated entirely to him, is that he harnessed the technology to bring us together. He evangelized the technology by encouraging people to get online and by urging blindness-driven bulletin boards to get together through FidoNet. He proved to others that it could be done and therefore encouraged many other blind people to set up bulletin boards. We'll begin our tribute to Willie by reading an article sent to us by Mark Sank of Pittsburgh, who's done some great research in advance of this program. We believe it was published in 1997, and it comes from the Pittsburgh Tribune Review. The headline reads, "Willie Wilson, Trailblazer, Leads the Blind into Cyberspace. From his Bellevue home, William, Willie Wilson, runs a computer bulletin board for visually impaired people." The article's by Emily Tipping. As diabetes gradually stole his sight, William, Willie Wilson, envisioned his life as a blind man. He'd buy a mobile home, he thought, and plunk it down on a remote piece of land where he could just sit and be left alone. Things couldn't have happened more differently. Wilson, 45, learned how to navigate with a cane and read a little braille at the Greater Pittsburgh Guild for the Blind in Bridgeville. He got a trained guide dog, moved into an apartment on the bus line in Bellevue, taught himself to use a computer, and then created BlinkLink, an online bulletin board for the blind that's nearing its 10th anniversary. "It was nothing like you'd imagine it to be," he said of the transition from 5 to 4 senses, noting that he is an adjuster. "I'd lose a little sight, scream a little bit, and then get used to it," he said. Compared to other diabetics, Wilson said he's fortunate to have lost only his eyesight and not organs or limbs or even his life. His girlfriend of 7 years, Mary Lou Poder, who hosts a show for Radio Information Service, has gone blind, undergone a kidney transplant and now a pancreas transplant. "Diabetes is more of a handicap than being blind," said Wilson, who worked in construction as a steamfitters union member until his world went completely black in 1979. In fact, Wilson credits his blindness with making him somewhat of a big fish in the little pool of blind and visually impaired computer users. That pool is much bigger now than it was when Wilson created BlinkLink in 1987, back when the internet was a mere gravel road between government bodies, businesses and schools. BlinkLink is still housed on FidoNet, a network of personal computers, and not the internet, although internet users can access BlinkTalk, the message area of BlinkLink, through the Global Blind Exchange World Service in California at gbx.org. Just how can a visually impaired person use a computer? The cheapest and most practical aid, Wilson said, is software that reads text on the screen in a synthesized voice. In his home office, Wilson logged onto the internet a few weeks ago and let Paul, a synthesized voice, read that day's news from the Philadelphia Inquirer. When Poda is online, Wilson said she insists on toggling to a female voice she calls Betty. Although the size of Braille characters makes translation to a computer screen awkward, some people use what's called a refreshable display that raises one line of Braille at a time. If a person has some sight, Wilson said, a screen enlarger can help him use a computer. After teaching himself how to use a talking computer at community college, where he worked as a tutor in English composition, he also studied cognitive psychology at the University of Pittsburgh, Wilson got the bug. He'd sit at his home terminal for 20-hour stretches, remembering to eat only when his blood sugar started to dive. BlinkLink started as a place for the visually impaired to talk to one another and obtain information about equipment and services. After Wilson gave a demonstration on BlinkLink at Pitt, several students formed the Visually Impaired Pittsburgh Area Computer Enthusiasts, or VIPACE. Wilson's bulletin board has grown to include sites on everything from home brewing to travel. Visitors can download classic novels and newsletters from both the National Federation of the Blind and the American Council of the Blind, which recognized Wilson in 1993 with an award for his pioneering efforts to bring blind and visually impaired people online. During a home demonstration, Wilson tried to access BlinkLink and was greeted with a busy signal, a common problem with phone line-based systems. He felt his way over to a second terminal in the corner and hit the space bar to find out who was logged in. The computer uttered a name. "He's a new user, a sighted guy," Wilson said, before pulling a wire to bump the man off the system. "One of the advantages of being the boss," he said, with obvious glee. Wilson gets a similar kick out of his work selling adaptive computer equipment and troubleshooting services for two different companies. He calls himself an adaptive systems specialist, only because he likes the resulting acronym. He checked that day's BlinkLink users, people from Fresno, California, Flushing, New York, Atlanta, and Pittsburgh. People all over the country can use the BlinkTalk message board by logging on to about 500 different systems, not just FidoNet. But plenty of people still make the long-distance call to access BlinkLink and the hundreds of files that get dumped into Wilson's computer. "It's a hub," Wilson said. "Everyone knows Willie's got it." That's a great article from 1997. My first memories of Willie go back to 1988, when I rang BlinkLink from New Zealand for the first time. Making that first international call on a 2400 baud modem was exciting, to think that I was connected to a bulletin board all the way in America. The board, even then, was full of treasures, exciting blindness-related files, messages from people who knew so much about computers and who were doing various jobs. It was a dream come true for me. After spending far too much time and money online, I sent a message to Willie before logging off, explaining that I'd called from New Zealand and how much it meant to be on a board like that. Just a few seconds after I disconnected from BlinkLink, my phone rang, and on the other end was Willie Wilson himself, sounding loud, enthusiastic, and ever energetic. "When I started my own bulletin board, New Zealand was able to receive the BlinkTalk Echo, and although the feed was unreliable at times, we could at least read messages from blind people around the world." We're going to bring in our panel in just a moment to share their memories of Willie, but before we do that, let's go back to BlinkTalk in about 1990, and we'll have the DeckTalk read this message as it was posted then from Willie. This is one of many messages of this kind that Willie would post. He was a raconteur. He just had a way with words. Have a listen to this message describing an interesting barbecue experience.
"Speaking of basketball, I was at a picnic this summer, and there in the driveway was a hoop. A couple of the half-inebriated guests were shooting foul shots, so I got the ball and said, 'Let a Blink show you how to do it.' I of course fully expected to miss the entire backboard, but I never let fear of making an ass of myself stop me before. So, this is no bull. Thought I positioned myself on the foul line, got myself pointed in the right direction with some verbal assistance, and took my first shot based entirely on memory of how high the hoop was in high school when I shot hoopers as a wink. Swish. I took two more shots, but with the same result, before I finally missed and immediately quit, wanting to stop while still ahead. Breakout, I never went 75 from the foul line before, and it is finally clear to me why. If only I had kept my eyes closed, I may have actually made the basketball team in my high school, despite the fact I didn't quite make it to 5'5". Willie. Blink talk blind bats in the belfry.
Isn't that wonderful? Blind bats in the belfry. This main menu tribute to Willie Wilson. Let's introduce our panel now. And we've got three people who have varying memories of Willie. First of all, in Pittsburgh, actually at the Vipace gathering, is Mark Sank. Hello to you, Mark.
Hi.
And we've got Don Breeder as well. Hello, Don.
Hi, Jonathan.
And Gary Petricaro, who I think was a co-moderator of the Blink Talk Echo. How are you, Gary?
I'm fine, Jonathan.
Excellent. Can we start with you then and talk about how you met Willie and how you became, how you got that responsible position of being the moderator of the Blink Talk Echo?
I was around. That's about all there was to it. Like a lot of people, I had some computer training. I knew what a terminal was. I started with the old Merlin computing services, monster terminals, the heavy teeth screen and the keyboard and not much else going for it, and a coupler for a modem. So I, a little bit about terminals, I did some computer work for a living. I had to do some stuff at home for that bank, and eventually I picked up a computer, and there had to be something to do with the rest of the day, so I had heard about bulletin boards, and I just started calling around, and I'm not really certain how I first found out about Willie's board, but it was pretty soon the place where I always went to talk with people about whatever going on, some of it handicapped-oriented, some of it not. There were various discussion groups, we called them echoes, not news lists at the time, and they had to do with hanging around Pittsburgh, they had blindness issues, anything you can imagine, homebrewing, as you said before, and I would spend a lot of time getting to know most of the people, including Don and Mark, from those message areas. And when I left Pittsburgh, my wife got another job, decided to start a business of her own. I moved out to Greensburg, which is about $45 million worth of phone calls away. The only way to keep in contact with these people was to start my own bulletin board. And I kind of flailed around for a while trying to figure out what to do, and Willie talked me into starting an Opus board. And Willie was a real fan of Opus, loved it. And he got me talked into doing it, and I started calling up and saying to him, listen, let's take some of these mail areas and turn them into echoes, send them out to other boards. I want to be able to get this at 12 at night when the rates are down, not make a phone call myself and read the messages online. And I'm sure he must have been getting other such calls from other people saying, let's turn, say, Blink Talk into an echo. It wasn't my idea, heaven knows. And pretty soon, it was an echo that had a small following, and it just kind of mushroomed.
It certainly did. I'd like to come back and talk a little bit about your memories of Willie the person shortly, but let's bring Mark Sank in at this point. And, of course, you're from Pittsburgh, Mark, and obviously there's a lot of reminiscence going on at the moment and mourning for a true legend in our field. How did you get to know Willie?
It's kind of an interesting story. Willie was, again, one of the pioneers. Having a computer back then, you were pretty isolated. Who did you call for help, And Willie was in Pittsburgh. I was just starting off at Pitt. And the person who ran the Disabled Student Services, Sabina Builder, she's here tonight, and introduced me to Willie. I'm not even sure Willie had a bulletin board at that time. He was just kind of exchanging information, well, what do you do, or what screen review program do you use, and just, you know, trading information. And I can remember when Willie was starting the board out, he'd give me a call in my dorm room and say, I just put something new on, could you try it? Because, you know, otherwise he'd be waiting for callers to, you know, call in, so it would take him the time to test it. And who would imagine that, you know, just a few short years later that you'd have busy signals for the whole weekend and never be able to get in there. Just the explosive growth. I think it just built that community.
Yeah, did he ever go beyond the one line? I think Blink Blink was always a one-line board, wasn't it?
It was, and as far as I know, it was operational until about a little bit more than a month. Just as it happens, we phoned Willie a month ago at the start of our meeting, and a few people around the room said hello. And he had told us that his bulletin board just had a power supply failure. So he was keeping it going for quite a while.
And despite the internet, people still rang it. You know?
Yep.
Yeah, it's amazing. Let's talk to...
You know, actually, Vipace, this group, we've been meeting for more than 10 years. I remember that Willie was going to do the a demonstration of the board. And you've got about 10 people around a table, and we started, you know, you get 10 people talking about computers.
Yeah.
And he didn't do very much of a demonstration. Everybody just started exchanging information. It was almost a free-for-all, and, you know, people were just, as you can imagine, it's kind of like, you know, having that community, and I think that's what we built.
Yeah, and
certainly a lot of memories.
And in a sense, Willie extended that concept globally to people being able to get together and share information and help each other out. And now there are hundreds and hundreds of blindness lists that do the same thing, of course, and Willie pioneered all of that.
Yeah, I think he realized early on that, you know, a computer for a blind person enabled you to do a lot of things, but having a phone line and a modem, you know, connected you with that network. I hear son, you know, when they say the network is the computer. I think Willie was... had that philosophy early on.
Don Breda, let's get your experience of how you came to know Willie and how you became a friend of his.
Well, Jonathan, I was one of the founding members of ViBug, the Visually Impaired Blind Users Group of Boston. And when we started the group, it was not only myself, but there's a few founding members. The group requested that they wanted a bulletin board. So I ended up taking on the duties of being the sysop and getting a bulletin board going back in 1987 on a 12 meg 286 with a 40 meg hard drive.
Yeah, amazing.
And, it ran on that system for a couple of years, I'll tell you.
And that was a massive amount of disk space, wasn't it? I
it
mean,
was
40
a massive
megs.
Amount of disk space,
man.
Back then, and a screaming fast machine.
Yeah.
Mind you. And I set up the Opus software, and Willie, I had found out about Blink Talk, so I used to call him, his board, and he found out that I started the ViBug board, and we got to talking, and he said, you know, Blink Talk is an echo you probably don't know anything about because it's only in Pittsburgh, it's a local echo, but I would really like to get somebody to carry this outside of Pittsburgh because I think it would be good, it has value, it's, you know, where blind and sighted people can get together and help each other with their computers, etc., and just share information and kind of level the playing field. So since I was on FidoNet and he was on FidoNet, I said, well, by all means, I'd be thrilled to carry it. So he started to feed Blink Talk to me, and I believe I was the very first bulletin board outside of Pittsburgh to carry that echo.
Darn.
And the ViBug members had called the board and other people that called the board that weren't ViBug members really, really took to that conference right away. And quite a lot of messages came out of the ViBug board going back to Blink Talk. And it really took off, and in no time, I think Willie was getting requests from all over the country to please add them to the feed list of who would get the Echo.
I believe it went national.
It did. After a while, it didn't go international right away, I don't believe, but after a while, it was so popular that he was getting requests from overseas, and he ended up feeding it to Europe, etc. And the thing is, it was an incredibly pioneering effort for more than one reason. First of all, it was the first time that blind people all over the country could be brought together and discuss issues about blindness, whether they be using a computer and technical issues, or how to throw a basketball properly, or how to cook a steak on a barbecue, or whatever. But at that time, there were many conferences on FidoNet, but not one having to do with disabilities, not one. And Blink Talk was the first, thanks to Willie. And, you know, that conference was so popular. It wasn't only users. It was sysops and everybody. They couldn't wait to get their hands on it. And in addition to him contributing to the blind community in such an incredibly big way, he really opened the door for other people with other forms of disabilities. And, boy, in no time, you saw other conferences pop up on the net for multiple sclerosis victims, etc. And the disability conference list grew by leaps and bounds, and I truly believe that Willie was responsible for that.
At this point, I'd like to give contact information for people who would like to participate in the program. Please feel free to contact us at any time. Using Spiderphone, thanks to them for their help, you can use the phone by calling the United States at area code 212-812-2800, and in most of your players, you'll find that information in the title bar. That's area code 212-812-2800. When Spiderphone asks you for a conference code, the one you should enter is 0480-5512. That conference code, 0480-5512. You can also use the Speak Freely Internet telephone software at acbradio.selfhost.com. That's ACB Radio, all joined together, .selfhost.com.
I can remember when I was involved in a previous relationship, he would be at my place, and it would be getting on toward 5 in the morning, and I would be downloading something, and I was big into downloading files, and many a night we would be watching the download. I have a Braille display. And if you sit there with your hand on the display, it's going 98%, 97%, 98%, 97%, 99%, and you're looking at the clock, and it's 4:58, 4:59, and we're going, go, 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 hurry up! And maybe we would have made it. Maybe it would not have logged us off, but we used to get so tense. Is this thing going to make it or not? And I'll always remember that.
Nothing to be said if there wasn't long downloads in everybody's past.
Oh, absolutely.
PBS.
This was like, what, 2400 baud, and we were so afraid that we'd lose the file. Invariably, we would be there at 4:59 and 50 seconds. So. But no, I only met Willie once, and he was always, you know, as Dave said, very, very... you know, fun to be around. I think the time that I did meet him, I think it was Chicago when we were in a restaurant. One of the restaurants, a bunch of us got together, the old Blink Talk parties. And I went to a couple of those, and I think Willie had to miss the other one that I went to, I believe, was in Tampa. But anyway, a lot of good memories. And when you think back to the BBS days and Willie, and what a long way we've come, and what a trail he did blaze.
That's for sure.
Okay, well, I will... relinquish and let someone... I hope this will be recorded and archived. So
well, we're doing our best, of course, but we're doing our best with that, but because of the problems that we are having, we're unable to record it if things keep... breaking up on us like they are. But we'll do our best. I appreciate the memories.
Sure, you're losing it too there in New Zealand, aren't you, Jonathan?
Oh, okay, I lost it a long time ago.
I'm not going there. I'm not going there.
Thank you for those memories.
Goodbye.
Have a good evening.
You too.
Bye-bye. And I think our Live 365 listeners are back with us. We'd like to apologize for the issues that we are having. I think there is some internet connectivity issue. We're actually broadcasting direct to an ACB radio server, so we're not a victim of the Live 365 issues of recent days. But whatever the reason, we are having some issues, and we sincerely apologize for that. Let's see if we have... yes, I think we do have a call available here on the Speak Freely. Go ahead. Hello there, speak to me. Okay, well, please make sure that your Speak Freely does work before you give us a call. Let's try this call. We have a call, again, using Speak Freely, paying tribute to Willie Wilson today on Main Menu. Hello there.
Hey, Jonathan.
Wow.
Hello there. Who's that?
Jonathan, this is Maggie Ostrowski.
Nice to hear from you.
Nice to be here. Brita, how are you?
Hey, Maggie, how are you?
Very good. And Gary, how are you?
I'm fine.
I remember you from the Post Road Inn.
My God, at least somebody remembers
me.
Uh-huh. Oh,
I
yeah.
Do. I do. Jonathan, I'm in Pittsburgh. And
yes.
I'm one of the original members of Zip Ace. And I'm back here with the group. I just paid my $5. They weaseled it out of me.
Now, you say VipAce. It's interesting because I said to Mark, is it VipAce or VipAce? And
well,
apparently Willie used to say VipAce.
He did, yeah. So I say VipAce too, and I always will.
Fair enough. What are your memories of Willie that you'd like to share with us?
Well, actually, there's a lot of things. First of all, we were logged on this evening and everything was going well, and then it just died on us, and you know, you knew that Willie was up there just laughing at us and calling us things that I probably can't say right now.
Oh, I'm sure. But at least he would have understood, though, because, you know, this technology.
He would have.
Yeah.
But I guess one of the things I would like to relate is on Blink Talk, actually on the private area of Blink Link, is where I met my sweetheart of the past 11 years, Bob Westerman. And the way I did that was I was in the, mustn't have been the private area, because it was an area, one of the areas on Blink Link that everyone could see the messages, but it wasn't Blink Talk.
Like an electronic blind date.
No, it wasn't blind date. No. But here's the way it went. It was... Willie's birthday. And I said, Willie, even though you're 42 years old, it doesn't mean you can't still have the body of a 22-year-old. Buy her a few drinks first. And that was when Bob Westerman chimed in. He said, hey, Willie, you've been holding out on me. Who is this person? And that was sort of how Bob Westerman and I got together. And that was 11 years ago.
How amazing.
And Bob and I have been Willie's, you know, friend since. I met Willie back in 1979 at the Guild for the Blind in Bridgeville. So I've known Willie for a real long time. We've gone through a lot of stuff. Just saw Willie at Christmas time. We got together with Willie and Big Lou, who is Mary Lou Potter, Willie's sweetheart. And we were going out to dinner. But Willie, he wasn't feeling very well, having some balance problems, walking problems. So we just went over to their house, made Bob go out and grill steaks. It was probably like 20 degrees. We made Bob go out in the back porch and grill steaks. We had a couple bottles of wine and just a very nice dinner that the four of us got to share. I definitely have a lot of memories of Willie and miss the little guy. And he was ornery, you know, we all know that. I was speaking with a friend of mine, a local friend who also knew Willie, a sighted friend, and I called her and told her that Willie had passed away. And
I said, you know, Willie didn't like anybody. He hated everybody. He always, you know, everybody was a, you know, I can't say whatever he would say. And Sue said, but he liked us. And I said, well, that's what everybody thought. Everybody thought Willie liked him, and he did, but he was ornery. He had that streak about him. But we all loved him.
And we certainly will miss him. Those are wonderful thoughts.
Mm-hmm. And I got to meet Brita because of Willie. Met Gary Petrocaro at some picnics because of Willie.
I think we all met because of Willie.
Uh-huh. Mm.
You got that right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what says as much about Willie as anything else. That so many people met because
mm-hmm.
shared because of Willie.
Well, and you know, Willie would talk of a good game sometimes, and he'd say, oh, you know, this and that and the other thing, but I don't care what he ever said. He never said no when somebody needed his assistance. He was always there. I never saw him in all the years I've known him, and that was a long time. I've never seen him not give a person a hand, even if he actually didn't like them.
Yeah, that's great. Look, I appreciate you sharing those very special memories with us, and, his memory will certainly live on. Yeah.
I couldn't have kept the board up and running if Willie hadn't done as much as he did. Just couldn't have done it.
Mm. That's wonderful. Thank you so much. Have a wonderful evening, and I hope you enjoy the memories.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye now.
Bye-bye,
guys. Bye-bye, Maggie.
Good touch,
This is Main Menu on ACB Radio Mainstream, and we are paying tribute to Willie Wilson today, and the technology gods, or whatever they are having fun with us, but hopefully we're here for the duration now. Let's see if we can take the Speak Freely caller. Hello there. Hey there. Hi, you're on Main Menu.
Hello, am I transmitting?
Go ahead. Okay, we've got some issues. I think people using Speak Freely with firewalls and all sorts of things, so I may actually just close that down and invite people to use Spiderphone, which seems to be much more reliable and will just assure us of a reasonable flow in the conversation. If you'd like to give us a call, area code 212-812-2800. That's area code 212-812-2800. And when you're asked for a conference code, use 0480-5512. That's 0480-5512, as we say hello to area code 954. Thank you for waiting.
Hey, Jonathan. It's Rick Alfaro.
Rick, great to hear you.
How are you doing?
I'm well, and of course you go way back.
Oh, yeah.
Man.
Yeah. Hello to Don.
Hey, Rick.
I'm on there. How you doing? And Gary. I know Gary, too. How you doing,
Hi,
Gary?
Rick. Nice to hear from you.
Yeah. I'm not much of a talker, but I really want to just call and pay my respect to Willie, because, boy, I'll tell you, he made a big difference in my life, as he did, you know, with a lot of other people, and I remember when I first got onto Blink Talk, it hadn't quite made it onto the National Echo yet. He called me from Pittsburgh, and was all excited because he said I was the first BBS to carry it down in the Southeast, and he was so excited about it, and it was just so nice to receive that phone call from him. And he always kept touch.
Yeah. Rick, while you're there, and we're talking about the whole Blink Talk thing, maybe you and Don and, particularly I guess you and Don, might be able to talk us through the whole way that FidoNet used to work, because I think that people who weren't around at that time would have no idea how sort of clunky the whole thing was, yet it worked, you know, it worked.
I always said, you know, to me it was amazing that it worked, but it did.
So how did it work? What did you have to do?
Well, basically, you know, you had to get yourself. First of all, you had to get yourself a mailer. Back then, Seabridge comes to mind, front door, or you had to have a BBS that was capable of sending and receiving these packets of mail.
Like that was the big argument, wasn't it? D-Bridge versus front door.
Because
front door was free, but D-Bridge was hugely expensive.
Right.
What did you go with? Right. Were you a D-Bridge man or a front door man?
Actually, I started with D-Bridge.
Oh, me too. Yeah.
I started with D-Bridge, and I liked it because it was like a package. Everything was all rolled into one.
Yeah.
It was, you know, it had a nice, fairly usable, nice interface, and then after D-Bridge, the author of Intermail, Front Door, eventually the one of the authors of Front Door went off on his own and put together a package called Intermail, and he happens to live here locally, so I switched over to Intermail. Anyhow, you had to have a method of taking these packets and sending them out and picking them up. In other words, you had to pick up your mail and you had to send out your mail, and it was very complicated. Even with D-Bridge, you still had to be, you know, real good at writing batch files and debugging things. Where, you know, why the mail didn't go out, or why a packet got chopped off halfway through the transmission, and there was all kinds of stuff. But it worked.
Don, you might be able to pick up on this. They had a thing called Zone Hour, because FidoNet was divided into different zones. New Zealand and Australia were Zone 3. I think you guys in the States were Zone 1. And you weren't allowed to take calls during Zone Hour. You couldn't take human callers.
Yeah, that's a
reference to 5 o'clock. Don, did you talk about the 5 o'clock mail hour?
That was correct. I think, as I recall, it was actually, I think, 4 to 5. In the morning, that you could not take human callers. You could only take callers. You could only take calls from another FIDO node that was going to transfer data. And some of us extended that time for more than 1 hour because of other echo distribution paths. They weren't always. You didn't always get all your conferences from the same place. For example, I got Blink Talk directly from Willie for most of the years that I carried it. But there were also what were called backbones on FidoNet, and those guys would feed and transfer data from tons of conferences. So a lot of times you got your feeds from a backbone, but you had the bulletin board or your mailer or whatever had what you called events, and one of the events you always had to set up was for Zone Hour, so that the board would not allow a human caller to come online, so you could have it free to send the mail it had to send and receive the mail that was destined for it.
Yeah. Net mail.
Oh, net mail. Yeah.
Net mail or Echo mail.
Yeah.
One of you could.
Personal and Echo was conference.
Right.
That's right. Yes. Yeah, can you go and how does Echo Mail actually? How did Echo Mail actually work?
It was a rather complicated scheme. What happened was when a message traversed from bulletin board to bulletin board in a particular conference, there was a structure imposed on that message by the BBS or the mailer that was FidoNet compliant. And it was actually rather clever, and it's amazing it worked as well as it did, but it really did. The message would actually grow as it passed around from bulletin board to bulletin board, because all of the boards that had already received that message, their nodes would be entered into what were called seen-by lines in the message. And you couldn't see them as a reader, but they were there underneath. So that every BBS that took that message and every FidoNet mailer that tossed it around knew where it had come from and where it had been and knew where it had to go. And they got passed along that way, usually directly fed from one board to another, but sometimes there would be hops where one board would take it and feed it to another board and so forth. But it all got automatically documented as the messages were repacked and retransmitted.
You got any other thoughts you'd like to share with us, Rick, before you head off?
No, not really. Just that I just wanted to call and pay my respect, and he was quite a guy, Willie, and he'll definitely be missed.
Yeah, you know, sometimes when you hear about the death of someone, you kind of think, well, that's sad. And other deaths, it really hits you, doesn't it? Somebody who you feel like you almost know. And I mean, I'm way over here in New Zealand, and I felt like I knew Willie Wilson. You know?
Exactly.
Yeah. Look, Rick, it's really good of you to call in, and it's nice to hear your voice at last too.
Yeah, it was nice to talk to you.
Yeah, thanks, Rick.
Okay.
Bye bye now.
Okay.
Bye. Yeah, we're paying tribute to Willie Wilson on Main Menu on ACB Radio Mainstream with a nice stable stream right now. Man, we have talked a lot about technology, and we've talked about Willie the individual, and we can do some more talking about that on the program. Oh, by the way, if you'd like to give us a call, Spiderphone is how you do it, area code 212-812-2800. That's area code 212-812-2800. And when you're asked to enter a conference code, it's 0480-5512. And you'll find that information in the title bars of most of your players, 0480-5512. Can we talk about the social impact of Blink Link and Blink Talk in particular? I think that one of the earliest moments when I really had a feel that this technology was going to change the way blind people interacted and the way organizations of and for the blind worked was all of the hullabaloo that Blink Talk was able to transmit, obviously not just around the US but around the world, about Jamal's expulsion from the NFB in, I think, 1991, because suddenly anybody had an outlet that would allow them to communicate with a large number of blind people around the States and even around the world.
You know, Jonathan, this is Don, if I might, for a second. I think that's a really good point, and I had actually forgotten about it. What I said in the beginning of the show, when you asked me to talk a little bit about Willie, how Blink Talk impacted, and it had such an impact on the world because all these other disability conferences sprung up as a result of knowing that it was okay to have a disability conference on the net and that it would be popular and be something that people wanted. And as a result, all these other conferences sprang up started by other people. But I never thought about it, but when you come right down to it, another lasting effect that Willie Wilson had was, after the whole controversy with Jamal, Blink Talk was such a vehicle in that really I think it had a lot of effect, and it also caused other organizations to start up their own echoes and have their own conferences, and it got organizations to realize that, hey, we should have an ACB echo or an NFB echo or whatever. And so he was in his own, in a sense, little way, because I never think he thought that it would have such a profound effect. He continued to affect the world year after year in some big way, shape, or form. It was pretty amazing.
But you know, that's something you brought up earlier. How we're getting separated. In Willie's vision, we should all be there talking to one another. And when all those little groups started their own conferences, echoes, news lists, whatever, in a sense that separated us, and we don't speak to each other as often as we used.
That's true.
Well, yes, it's very difficult when you're a pioneer in a field, I suppose, and you start something and it becomes big. I mean, there were hundreds of messages a day going through that thing at one point. You could sit there for 3 or 4 hours, and it was fascinating because nothing was really off topic. You know, they're not these sort of narrow type list subjects that we have today. And I suppose that imitation is the best form of flattery, but as you rightly say, it lessens its impact when people are all over the place, I guess.
You don't get to know the people.
Mm.
You don't get to know them as individuals. You don't get to see the issues. And after a while, you can do a lot of hurt to yourself in the sense that you think stereotypically. Blink Talk forced you to not do that because you were directly confronted with the people's discussions and you had to deal with it.
See, the important... Go on.
Well, it was just fun. It was an enjoyable time. It was very exciting. It was, the newness was a part of it, but that wasn't all of it.
I suppose the important thing to remember is that this was before the web, and so people who had some sort of issue and could articulate it clearly were actually able to self-publish via Blink Talk and Blink Link. And somebody earlier mentioned the BDN, which I think stood for Blink Distribution Network, didn't it?
If I remember right, that's what it was.
Yeah. Could we hear a bit more about that and how that worked and what it was exactly?
Well, it took off from the Filebone distribution network, and Filebone was File Backbone. And what happened were there were hundreds of areas of, like echoes, files on certain topics, certain areas of front door, RBBS, various bulletin board systems. They'd all have their file bone topic, and they would send a file describing what was coming and request it or take the whole feed of whatever was coming down that week. And because the connections were so horribly slow, you had to be real particular about what you picked, and Willie decided that the best thing to do for all the various demos of the speech programs we were using at the time, the JAWS, the the ASAP,
and Flipper.
Flipper, yes, that was Willie's favorite, Flipper. And so to keep all that running so people got theirs, plus, like I say, the Braille Forum and the Braille Monitor, he would put all these on his own BDN, and boards that wanted that and had the room for it and the time for it could just set up to pick up those files from him, and then they'd have it on their own hard disks for local users to grab and play with.
Willie was also into more than just obviously blindness-related things. He's a multifaceted person. He also, I understand, moderated the Como Echo. Now, Como was a great old communications package, absolutely fast, sort of bare bones, and very configurable because it was based on this macro language. And Willie really got into that too, didn't he?
I sort of remember that, although I don't know for sure how long he was a moderator. God knows I used Como a lot and loved that program. And but he, you're right, he wore more than one. He did wear more than one hat and moderated more than one conference at different times.
I guess that... Go on.
I think the thing about this is we talked about advocacy, that this was a way for blind people to communicate with the producers of software. I think it inspired Fred Brucker to make a lot of changes in Como because he knew there were blind people out there using it. I look back at the Google archives and see all these things, you know, Como versus Telex and Read.com versus Read It. QEdit came out with a version for blind people. And all the screen readers came to Blink Talk to get feedback. It was the start of something.
That's for sure.
That's right.
Yeah, there was Procom Plus, and Boyan was another program that a lot of people used. There was GT PowerCom, which I also think had some blindness-related features in those days. And there was Terminate, which I think was a bit later on the scene, which also had a blind-friendly mode, and quite a few blind people got into Terminate as well. Yeah.
And, you know, you had mentioned in the beginning of the program, Jonathan, that people used to use mail readers like
yes.
like Blue Wave and
yeah.
Silver Express. And you take a reader like Silver Express, which was by far my favorite, Hector Santos, who was the author, wrote a very elaborate speech interface to that reader that the speech user could configure and make that reader say what you wanted it to say and do what you wanted it to do. It was really, if there hadn't been a conference like Blink Talk, most of the things that happened with these programs, I don't think would have happened. I really don't. But a lot of authors realized and really bought into this and really did go out of their way to make their program speech friendly.
And they got recognition for it.
They sure did.
Which helped.
Yes, yes they did. And if we could somehow search all of the documentation for a lot of the DOS programs of that era, you'd find so many references to screen readers or blind people, and that is mainly through all of the advocacy and feeling of empowerment that came out of that Blink Talk Echo.
That's for sure.
Now, we also had some other... See, the offline mail reader concept, something that a lot of existing computer users would find fascinating, I guess, because you used to have to log into the board and go to a special, what they called a BBS door, for the particular reader you were using, although there became a de facto standard with the QWK mail format, I guess, towards the end there. But you would have to select the conferences you wanted bundled up, and then it would go away and search all the message areas. Once it had done that, it would zip up all of the messages in some sort of format, depending on the reader you were using, and then you'd download generally a zip or an ARJ file. Oh, you remember the old ARJ?
Yeah,
yeah. And you'd unzip the, or it would unzip this thing, and off you'd go, and it would be. I think that was a breakthrough too, because people who perhaps didn't have a bulletin board in their area that carried Blink Talk could at least dial in, and very quickly, once you got it set up, you might be able to grab your messages in about 3 or 4 minutes and sit there for hours reading and upload your replies again.
Well, this is an outgrowth of a speed we didn't have. I mean, people don't understand. We started out with 300 baud modems, 1200 baud modems, 2400 baud modems, and we'd watch the speeds increase and we'd go, wow. But paired to the cable nets and the DSLs that we have today, these are horribly slow. I mean, I would rack up $100 phone bills and I'm only 30, 40 miles away from Pittsburgh. It was awfully expensive to run a book those days. And as Don said, we're using 30, 40 megabyte drives. I must have had, excuse me, I had probably a record of having the slowest hard drive that was ever made, and I tried to run a bulletin off this. That thing had 100 millisecond peak time.
Oh, my God.
That's pretty bad. Yeah. So, Don, did you say that you were using Opus? Is that the board that you set up?
Yes, I ran Opus for a long, long, long time, for probably 6 or 7 years, and then I switched to PC board.
Oh, good on you. Yeah, that's the one I used to use after a while. You know, in nowadays, you go onto a web page and you tab through the links, and the interface is remotely similar everywhere you go. Of course, when you logged into a bulletin board, you were never sure what you might be confronted with, really.
That's quite true, and some of the BBSs were quite different than others, and so you couldn't bank on what you could do with one, you could do with another. Even the message reading interfaces were different. The file downloading interfaces were vastly different, etc. And I'll tell you, you know, I have to say, in my probably 10 or 11 years as SysOp, I probably played with every mailer and so forth, and several BBS packages, and I loved PC board in a lot of ways, but when it came to FidoNet and the handling of FidoNet, there was nothing like Opus, because it was built in from the ground up, and I really loved that software, and it was free software. It was free software. If you made a donation to the AIDS campaign, you could do whatever you wanted. It was free software, and it was so amazing.
Yeah, it cost a bundle, the old PC board, I tell you, and all the accessories for it as well.
That's right. And you know, it's funny, because Linux now, in a way, that Opus was a model for anybody who wrote utilities for it. They had to be free as well. So you had a lot of third-party utilities that you never paid a dime for, and yet the authors were right there to make changes when you requested them, and add features.
It was it was also a question of the description file. They had to be different for different bulletins.
Oh yeah, that was a nightmare and a half, I can tell you.
I remember looking at the early Gutenberg disk, one of the first ones, and it had different file description format for different bulletin boards, so you could put the files up.
That's right.
Wildcat, RBS, whatnot. I mean, things nowhere near as standardized as they are now. It'd be a whole lot of fun transferring stuff.
I could tell you when I, during the running of iBug, I put in a 7 CD-ROM changer, and I had the Simtel 20 archives up there on CD, and I had some of the PC board-related CDs up there and the Opus-related stuff, and I'll tell you, there are times I spent weeks editing and converting description formats for thousands of files from one board to another if there wasn't a utility that did it properly. You're right about that.
It doesn't bear thinking about, doesn't it? When you look back at how much time we used to spend doing all this stuff, and money for that matter,
yes,
you wonder what sort of house you'd be living in if you hadn't run a bulletin board.
My wife does that to me all the time. Remember those phone bills you used to rack?
Yes.
I remember if you had a problem like a hard drive crash or something like that, I remember spending really most of 2 and 3 days at a time, maybe 20 out of 24 hours working on the thing because you felt compelled to get the service back up and running because it was so vital at that time because there was nothing else.
And there weren't the comprehensive backup like tape drives and such that you have now. They weren't fast. Jumbos. The Jumbo Quick 80 format was about... isn't that Quick 80?
Yeah.
Remember. That was a real boon.
Yeah, whoopee.
Yeah, but look at it now.
If you've just joined us, this is Main Menu, and we're paying tribute to Willie Wilson, who is a pioneer. Hello there.
My name is Connie. I'm calling you from the Pittsburgh Bypass Purging to me.
Hello.
And he didn't know I had gotten an Arc and Clone computer, and he didn't know that Blink's already programmed into it.
Oh, wow.
From the factory.
That's amazing.
So I thought that was really cool, and I was happy to make him happy to know that. He was really excited. So thank you for letting me talk.
Yes, I'm sorry if you've been waiting a while. I didn't realize that you were actually there. But so he was someone who couldn't be helpful enough. That's the impression that always comes through when people talk about Willie. He just seems to have endless patience and advice. Yeah. But Connie, thank you so much for sharing the memory and for turning up to Vipace this evening.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
I'm going to have to go. I think I've just been given the signal.
Oh, that's fine. And thank you for sharing your memories, too. It's been wonderful.
Thank you very much for letting me. And nice talking to everybody there.
Okay. Bye-bye now.
Take care.
Bye. See you guys later.
This is Main Menu on ACB Radio Mainstream, and nice and stably streaming, and we apologize for the issues at the beginning of the program. But we are sharing memories of Willie Wilson and the Blink Talk, the Blink Link bulletin board. And we are certainly welcoming of your contributions, not just necessarily about Willie, although that would be absolutely great if you do have any personal recollections of Willie, but also the whole BBS era, the software we used to use, what it meant to suddenly be in communication. If you'd like to get in touch with us, we're using Spiderphone, area code 212 in the United States, 812-2800. That's area code 212-812-2800. And when you're asked to enter a conference code, it's 0480-5512. And the lines are available now. 0480-5512 is the conference code. I guess that a tribute to Willie and the whole Blink Talk and Blink Link era wouldn't be complete without us mentioning the fact that some people found the names Blink Link and Blink Talk quite objectionable.
I think some people probably did. I know there was some talk of that at one time or another over the years on the Echo, but I thought they were great. I kind of thought that was just Willie's style, you read so much email today, and it's so hard sometimes for people to get their personality across in a message, but Willie did it from the Echo name on down, because he could write a very intelligent message, and yet you felt you were in the room with the guy by the time you finished reading it. And I think that Blink Link and Blink Talk and so forth were just, you know, another part of Willie's personality that just shined forth every day.
I hadn't actually heard of that term until I came across Blink Link itself. Is that a commonly used term in the United States, talking about blinks for blind people and winks for sighted people?
Yes, I think it is quite common.
And some people felt so strongly about it that I think another Echo was set up, that there were quite a few, from memory, NFB people who felt that the name Blink Talk was so objectionable that they would set up an Echo called Blind Talk.
Yes, that's right. You're right. I remember that. I think that started in the early 90s at some point. And you're right, they did call it Blind Talk, just to make the point.
Yeah, it never quite got the traction that Blink Talk had.
No. Well, it was a pretty hard act to follow, Jonathan.
It sure was. Yeah. What about the transition to Windows? I remember seeing a post from Willie maybe two or three years ago on the whole subject of Windows, and it's been, I guess in the last couple of years, an argument. The tide is turning, but people still say, well, were we better off in the DOS days than we are now? And Willie wrote a post, I remember, being quite adamant that the days of DOS were better days, more accessible days. Did he ever really feel comfortable gravitating to the Windows environment?
Well, I don't know if anybody else is still on the line, or they could speak to it better than I did, if they were more over his house more often than I was. But I don't think that he ever became comfortable with Windows, to my knowledge. Although he did use it and he was on the internet and so forth, I think his love was that BBS, and that's what he really did, and I don't think he felt any compelling need to go over to Windows in any big sort of way. And I'm not sure, I don't know how many computers he ended up with, but when I visited him, he had the bulletin board computer, and I think he had one other computer, but those machines, by today's standards, were rather old, and they wouldn't have probably done a very good job of running Windows anyway.
We have another call actually from Pittsburgh on the line now, so we'll put that to air and say hello, welcome to Main Menu.
Hey, Jonathan, this is Mike Gravett calling from Pittsburgh. How are you?
Mike, it's nice to hear your voice. We've been corresponding a bit over the last week or so.
Yes, we have, and I just want to take some time to express my thanks for you doing this show for Willie and for Vipace and moving the time up and accommodating
welcome.
To us.
It's no problem at all, and I only apologize that we've had a few gremlins in the internet works today. There's some sort of blockage somewhere, I think.
Yeah, the blockage is Willie up in the sky looking down on us, I think.
He's saying we should have been in a Fidonet Echo doing this somewhere.
Anyway, I just want to thank you really quick, Jonathan, and wish you well.
Thank you, Mike, and thanks for your help putting the program together.
All right, take care, Willie.
Okay, bye-bye.
Jonathan, I'm sorry. Gosh, I'm sorry. That's weird because I'm listening to myself in a delay in the background, and I'm listening to you, and I'm getting confused.
Yes, it's a dreadful thing when that happens, isn't it?
Yeah, it doesn't take much to confuse me anyway. All right. All right, good night, Jonathan.
Thanks, Mike. Bye-bye.
Or good day, I should say.
Yes, indeed. Thanks very much for calling. And we... we still have some minutes left if you'd like to speak with us about the bulletin board era and Willie Wilson and this whole, I guess, past era. Although, as I think somebody made the comment earlier in the program, Don, there are telnetable BBSs. Do you bother with those?
Truthfully, I don't. I used to. Every once in a while, I would telnet into one of them, and it was kind of fun. But, I think what happens to most people on the internet is after a while, if you join enough listservs, you get so overwhelmed with that stuff that you don't have time to go putting aside and just telnetting into BBSs anymore. And of course, when you telnet into the BBS, a lot of times you lose some functionality. Not in all cases, but in some cases you do. You lose some of the functionality you had with the BBSs when you dialed in over a modem. So it becomes a little bit less appealing.
One thing we haven't talked about that was really big in the BBS days is the whole concept of the tagline. And you used to be able to get these tagline managers that would randomly put different taglines at the bottom of your messages. Some of them, you probably have heaps of them that you can think of. Some of them I remember are things like, in God we trust, all others we voice verify. And then there was the quote from Bill Gates that said something about 640K should be enough for anybody. And,
that's right, yes.
Oh, gosh, what else was there?
Oh, my God.
Heaps of them.
Yeah. Oh, there were so many of them, sometimes I wasn't a big fan of taglines, but some of them were so darn funny that you just had to grab them and use them. And in fact, even the mail readers had support for stealing other people's taglines built in.
Yeah.
You could have your own collection.
That's right. The mail readers had a steal tagline feature.
That's right.
And when you saw a tagline at the bottom of the message, you just pushed the steal tagline hotkey and it got added to your taglines.
And, you know, I often wondered, I'm sure you, like myself, were on the Internet in the 80s and how wonderful it was, but in a way how sterile it was. I really wonder if the ability to have signatures in an Internet email message would have ever come about if it wasn't for such proliferation of taglines on BBSs.
Yes, I'd like to talk a bit about the way that the Internet was perceived by FidoNet users in those days and vice versa, but let's go back to area code 412 in Pennsylvania. Hi there.
Hello, Jonathan.
Hey.
This is Michael Zakin from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Hello, Michael.
And I'm calling to salute Willie and salute you and your guests for this wonderful program you've been putting on.
Well, thank you.
I know in Pittsburgh, Willie now is a legend, and
yeah,
his contributions and what he's done for the blind community especially will live on. And I just want to reemphasize the point that Mark Sink made earlier in regards to software development and letting those people who were writing adaptive software that through BlinkLink, BlinkTalk, and the other BBSs, that, you know, the blind community had a way of letting their needs known to the world and to these developers, so that the programs that they were writing could become more efficient. And I think probably with developers today, with the software we're using with Windows, probably a lot of that would be much further behind if it wasn't for, you know, all those years back in the 80s and 90s that transpired before, you know, Windows had to be used. It would be much more difficult now to use Windows if all that wouldn't have had what all the input that was needed and all the work that was done that went into developing all that before.
Yeah, and I know that it's common to think that the good old days were better than they actually were, but, you know, you do get the occasional Windows developer who bends over backwards to make some changes, but I don't think there's nearly as much of that kind of thing going on as there was in that era. It just seemed to be all over the place.
Well, probably a lot of it had to do with the newness of it, you know. So many people, it was new to everybody, you know, especially in getting on bulletin boards. You had nothing like the web back then, and computers were just coming into you know, being popular, and in the blind community, that was one of the easiest ways you can really communicate quickly and instantly.
Yeah, and yet it wasn't easy. I mean,
I
still wonder whether, in fact, it's easier to get up and running with Windows because you don't have to worry about command lines and all sorts of DIR and goodness knows what else. And yet, as long as you had that modem either plugged into your serial port or inside your computer, and somehow you were directed to Blink Talk. You know, it was all there, all the help you could possibly want, free of charge.
Oh, definitely. And to look at someone like Willie, who didn't have a good financial, you know, it was his own money, most of it, you know, and he, you know, as far as his financial means, you know, he wasn't an affluent fellow, but he dedicated his time and as much money as he could in putting, you know, running that bulletin board and spending a lot of time. Most of his day was dedicated to running that board. And also he really was involved in the community with the Vipace group. I was there in some of the earlier meetings back in 1988-89 when Vipace was started, and Willie was really adamant on making sure that personally he can work with people on learning computers and getting involved with BlinkLink and adaptive software, especially.
Hmm.
Someone just said Willie never slept.
No.
And Willie was adamant on making sure people contributed too. Willie gave a lot of his time, but he wanted to make sure that you participated, or when you got on BlinkLink, if you downloaded some files, he got after you if you didn't upload some files to share with other people.
You'd get that file leech message.
That's right, but I don't think he ever introduced a ratio. I know that some boards, if you downloaded a certain number of files without uploading, they just stopped you downloading any more. But Willie was more direct than that. He'd just send you an email message saying, you know, you got to give to receive kind of thing.
You got that right.
Yeah, amazing.
You know, it's funny, Jonathan, because in some boards, that was a very automated approach. And
yes.
Willie never took that approach. He would spend the time to write you and say, hey, you think you could contribute to the community in some way, you know.
Yeah,
he wanted everyone to carry their fair share, you know, contribute.
Yeah, and
he'd
say something like, you know, everybody must have one file that they don't see on here that they can share.
That's right.
Yeah, amazing. Hey, very good thoughts, Michael, and I appreciate you taking the time to give us a call this evening.
Well, thank you very much, Jonathan.
Yeah,
bye.
Have a good evening. Bye-bye. We are reminiscing tonight about BlinkLink and BlinkTalk and bulletin boards and that whole era, and in particular, Willie Wilson, the man who made it happen. And if you'd like to give us a call, it's area code 212-812-2800. That's area code 212-812-2800. And 0480-5512 is the conference code. And someone who's done that is in area code 302. Hello there.
Good evening, Jonathan. This is Lynn Schneider from Delaware.
Hello, Lynn.
Hi. I just wanted to make a few quick comments. One of my very first online experiences was on Willie's board. In fact, I think it was my very first. And it seems to me that with the end of the BBS era, we've lost something that we still don't have, and I think that's a real sense of community. I mean, as a new user to the Internet, I can remember going to Willie's board and other boards like it and finding everything I needed in one place. And, I mean, whether you wanted to chat or do email or download files or just learn, everything was in one place. And I think that's the thing that new users now, the newcomers to the Internet now, really don't have. I mean, we don't have a one-stop shop anymore for everything that you would want to know. And if you didn't know something, you know, help was just a few keystrokes away. And I think it's more difficult now for new users because everyone's sort of spread out, you know, all over the Internet in lists, in email lists. But if you can't find those lists, how are you going to get the help you need? Whereas with the BBS, everything was right in one place. And really, to me, we just don't have that anymore.
You don't have that on the Internet. That's not there.
Exactly, and the sense of community, I think, as you were saying, I can remember in the BBS days that people would complain to the sysop that something wasn't right, or, you know, why was the board down for so long or whatever, And, of course, you don't have that today. I mean, I'm a member of Comcast, and certainly if my email goes down right now, I just can't, you know, call the management and start screaming. And, you know, we knew exactly who the management was in a BBS. You know, you didn't have, you didn't call a toll-free number and, you know, get somebody who maybe didn't even care. I mean, you know, the sysops were very close to their work was a labor of love.
Lynn, many of the bulletin boards were, of course, run in people's homes, and I felt that when you logged onto a board, it was almost like walking into someone's house. Right from the log-on screen through to the user interface and the way the screens were customized, the language used, each board had its own very unique atmosphere. And it was like when you logged on, you were sort of in that person's house and you were welcomed, and sometimes you felt more welcome in some places than others. And then you'd log off and it was like walking out the door. It was a unique kind of experience, and not, I think, quite the same as visiting a website and going to another website. It's I don't think it is the same, is it?
Indeed. This is Mark. It was more personal. Willie's first guide dog was named Strider. And, of course, that led to the striding along. It speeds up to 9,600. Boy, I hope you have a sense of humor, because you've just connected to BlinkLink.
Oh, gosh.
That's right.
Wow. Well, thank you so much for allowing me to speak.
Lynn, it's wonderful to hear from you. And I wasn't sure if you went quite that far back, so there you go.
Indeed, I was.
Yes.
I was.
Oh, man. Lovely to hear from you, and thanks for those memories. Very good thoughts.
Okay.
Bye-bye now. And still time for you to share your memories on the whole bulletin board era and Willie Wilson in particular, if you'd like to get in touch. This is Main Menu on ACB Radio Mainstream, and we put on a few special gremlins just for Willie tonight to sort of make us all feel at home. But they're all ironed out now. Area code 212-812-2800 and the pin 0480-5512. Thank you to Spiderphone for making it happen, and the lines are open and available. You guys are too serious to play games on the bulletin boards, are you?
Well, I was never a game person, Jonathan, I'm sorry to say.
What about you, Mark?
I never played online games much or interactive, and I still don't to this day. I kind of was the information collector, you know.
Oh, man. Okay, well, I'll come clean then, because one of my favorite door games was the Card Sharks game, and I can't quite remember all the details of how it was played, but a lot of those doors used to run on multiple bulletin boards, and you'd have to structure a configuration file for that particular board, and the manual would be full of instructions as to, I think one of the files was doorinfo.sys. I can't remember which board used that. Oh gosh, anyway, they were all configuration files, and Card Sharks, I was so into this game that I actually wrote a set of JAWS for DOS macros for it. using Alt and the number rows so that I could just quickly whack out the commands and get through round after round of this game and get to the top of the list of high scorers, you know. But apart from...
Oh, you sick puppy.
Yeah, well, apart from that, I didn't play many. Oh, gosh. Let's see. Go on, while I find this... Oh, here we go. I'm just looking for... We have another call, and the next one is from area code 919. Welcome to Main Menu.
Yes, is this me?
It's you.
Okay, all right. I'm calling from Raleigh, North Carolina.
Right.
And I was in Winston-Salem at the time when I first actually met Willie. One morning before 8 o'clock in the morning, before the rates would go up, I would call long-distance bulletin boards, and I don't even remember how I had found out about BlinkLink. I found some file somewhere, and the little comment, you know, another zipper from BlinkLink was on air. And I got the number, and I called and logged on, and, of course, you know, you have to leave your number and everything. And, you know, I thought it was really neat that there was that kind of a board, and about, half hour after I logged off, my phone rang. And there's this other voice on the other end of my line. You know, is this Brian Lewis? I said, yeah, sure. This is William Wilson from Pittsburgh. I said, what? and this was all with a T1000 laptop or computer and a 2400 baud modem, right? About 1990 or so. And I know quite a few years after that, when my wife and I would go up to Pittsburgh in February for the Keystone Bowling Tournament, we would always get with Willie and Mary Lou and go over and visit with them. And we missed it the last couple of years because of things on their end that happened, and it was one of those things that I, you know, meant to call him and just never did, and then I heard about this, and it was really sad, but he was a great guy. He was really one good, good person.
Can you tell us a bit more about Willie, the person, since obviously you got together with him and Mary Lou and got to know him a bit. What kind of person was Willie?
Just a basic down-home person. He would never, if I had a computer question, he would always answer it. He was just as nice as he could be. My wife, of course, was not nearly as much into computers as I was, so basically she and Mary Lou would sit out in the kitchen and talk about whatever they were talking about, and Willie and I would, whoever, you know, who came over to visit at the time, there was several times when there were other people there as well, but we'd sit in the other room and talk about computers and this and that and the other, and sometimes, you know, music and different things, and just have a great old time, and we always hated to leave.
He was always full of a story, certainly on the Echo, and
mm-hmm.
he just had a way with words, a way of, you could almost, if you'd ever spoken to him on the phone, you could almost hear him saying what he was writing. He seemed to me to be one of those
exactly.
guys who could write like he talks.
Yeah, you are absolutely right on that, Jonathan. And I have got a question that maybe somebody can answer right quick. Does anybody know, I mean, I heard that the board's not operational anymore. Does anybody know what's going to happen to all of that material that's on there? Is there going to be a website or something where it's going to be available to people?
Boy, that's a good question. This is Mark, and people have asked that. We really have to get in touch with Mary Lou and see what happens. The last I can recall, he had 400 megabytes of files, so it would take you a while to go through that website.
I think it would be fantastic if somehow the board could just be uploaded as is, and just have a tribute that simply stays there to Willie, and you know, maybe this program and other tributes that are on lists and things, and so that no one ever forgets what an important man he was in the whole blind community and his contribution to technology. That'd be a wonderful thing.
Yeah, that I have to agree with that. I have to agree with that because, I mean, where I was, there were, you know, a lot of nice people who, you know, if I had a computer question, they were willing to answer it. But they were basically coming from the point of view of a sighted person. And that was all they knew, and that was all they could know. And then, you know, there was Willie, who I could, you know, call and talk to, or I could just leave a question on the board in the message area, and next day or two I could call back and there would be an answer. And it was just so neat, and I agree, he should really not be forgotten, and all of the material that he was able to amass over the years should probably be available somewhere. I hope it is, and I just hope that I can hear about it when it is, because there's a lot of great stuff out there.
Wonderful. Hey, I appreciate you calling in and sharing your memories. They're great.
Well, you're most certainly welcome. I'm glad to be able to do it.
Okay. Bye-bye now.
Have a good night.
You too. Bye-bye. Let's go to area code 212. This is Main Menu. Hi.
Hello, Jonathan. Steve Benson right here.
How are you, Steve?
On an alternate number tonight.
Yes, indeed.
So
that's what I did.
My wife could use the other line.
I didn't recognize your face on that number, but now you know the first time I ever heard of you was in the Blink Talk Echo.
Really?
Oh, yes. I saw you.
That must have been a while ago.
It was a while ago. And then there was a long, long gap, and suddenly you appeared on my PC audio list. So you must have some great memories of that whole era, because you ran a board.
Oh, I certainly do.
Yeah.
I was just about the only disability board in between Pennsylvania and Massachusetts for a long, long time. And I had a lot of ties with Willie electronically. I believe I only spoke to him once, and it was only for about a minute and a half. I've never actually met the man in person. I never spent any time in his company. And I never spoke to him, as I said, for more than a minute or two when we were trying to iron out a technical issue. But you're right. I could get the sense that you could, if you knew what he sounded like, you could put his voice to what he wrote, and it would be like he was standing there talking it to you instead of writing it to you.
That's a rare gift, you know, to be able to do that.
That's very true.
Yeah.
And he never said no. He always had an answer or knew where to get one. And he was just like this focal point, this font of information. And everybody funneled every information that they had through him. And I was real glad to be a part of that for a long time.
What did you run in the way of software and things for your board?
Oh, let's see. I started out with some Apple programs back in the early 80s.
You ran a BBS with that?
Oh, yes.
Far out.
I ran a BBS. I ran three different BBSs on an Apple system. One was pirated software BBS. I have to admit. Back in the 300 baud days, there was this program called ASCII Express. And it had a bulletin board feature.
Okay.
And if you logged into the thing, you could get access to files. It was basically a file-swapping situation. There were no messages that you could leave unless you left a text file with the message text in this file. But I did that for a while, and that sort of died of its own weight. And then I put up another one. What was the name of that software? Networks 2. That was the big one that everybody was using. But it was a basic program, and I think it had more holes in it than a Roach Motel, and probably more bugs than the hotel down the street. And then I found this other thing. Somebody had written an interpreter, which was, it was like BASIC, but it had extensions to it where you could do other things besides what you could do with the Apple BASIC statements. And he was selling it for a good piece of change, and it was called GBBS. And I put that up for a while, and that lasted about 3 years. And the only reason it died was because I sort of exceeded its capabilities, and I exceeded its capacity, and I needed to move on to something else. So in 1987, I put up a Unix-based BBS, written by a guy right here in New York named Steve Manis. And I ran that for 3 years. And then I put up another PC-based BBS, and that ran for another 4 years on Maximus.
Oh, yeah, good old Maximus. I know that one.
Oh, yeah. And then in 96, I got out of the BBS business entirely because everything was going over to the Internet. And I said, I don't really see a need for this anymore, so I just let it go. I told everybody it was going down on a certain date, and on that date it went down.
So presumably you took the Blink Talk Echo at some point?
I took it from the minute I heard about it until I went down in August of 96.
Yeah. And you used to be a pretty prolific poster.
5 or 6 years altogether.
You used to post pretty prolifically on there, because you can write you can write a long message when you want to.
Yes, I used to have a teacher in school that said my nickname should have been Verbosity Pomposity.
Yeah, but one of the previous callers mentioned that Willie would ring people back, and that's exactly what happened to me, that you'd register, and then he'd ring you back. Most of us were using those automatic callback verifiers, you know, where...
Oh, yeah, there were plenty of those, weren't there?
Yeah, and it would actually hang up.
Did you have a BBS runner yourself, Jonathan?
What was that?
You were a BBS operator?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. My problem was I could never decide on one piece of software. I started off with Wildcat, and I still, I think, am entitled to a free upgrade.
Are you still around?
And went to... I ran an RBBS for a while, GT Powercom, and there was an alternative to FidoNet called GTNet. That I pulled in for a while, and then ultimately, finally, settled for a long time on PC board. And it seems to me the Linux heads would love PC board because you could actually stack a whole session on the command line, right from when you logged in and put your password in to getting the mail, downloading a file if you knew what the file was. You could just stack the whole thing on the command line and push enter.
That's how those offline readers worked. They just pumped a whole session worth of stuff out there. You know, log me in, get my packet, log me off, goodbye.
Yes.
All in one 90 or 100 character screen.
Yeah.
Oh, I remember those days. I remember the offline readers. Oh, boy.
Yeah, that's true. They did do it that way, and usually it worked like a charm, too.
It always did, didn't it, Doc?
Yeah, sure did.
Silver Express and Blue Wave and First Reader. And
First Reader, that's another one.
All different formats, the QWK format. And
see, First Reader.
Everybody had their own proprietary format, but they all, when push came to shove, they all had an interface with the final packets.
Yeah.
Yes. And, you know, First Reader was good because it was one of those readers that used a database on your system. So if you had the space, you could actually build up a huge archive of the board.
Oh, yeah. That's true. It didn't do it quite the same way that the other ones did.
Yeah, that's true, because Silver Express, you could do that too, but it was like Opus and Maximus BBSs themselves, where everything was a single message per file.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Which had its advantages, but also had its disadvantages in the days of slow hard drives and stuff like that.
Yeah, you could toss a packet and hear that thing grind for hours.
Oh, my God. It's funny because, you know, people worry about their hard drives and when they're going to crash and all of this stuff, but if they ever ran a bulletin board like that...
Oh.
That tossed, you know, 10,000 messages in an hour and renumbered them and reset the message pointers, and your hard drive would just make noise for three hours and never stop.
Yeah,
and you realize that 10 years later, that same hard drive was still working. You realize how phenomenally good they really are.
The another tagline I've just remembered, speaking of all the time we used to put into these bulletin boards, is "Not tonight, darling, I have a modem." But, but you know, my bulletin board actually crashed. The hard drive died while I was on my honeymoon.
Oh.
And I came back from the honeymoon, and there it all was, or wasn't. But
oh,
do you think we've lost anything, Steve, in terms of having moved on from that era?
In certain respects, yes, and in certain respects, no. There was a lot more local feeling of community, at least on the non-national boards, or the non-national message areas. Like if you had a local area for your city, and then you had the final links or the interlink links or whatever software you were using, there seemed to be a lot more of that than there is now. Now everybody's like, it's just this one great big room, and everybody's there.
Yeah, I mean, that's right. See, it was an event. These days, you can just whip on over to, say, the New York Times, for example, from where I am, and have a look at what the latest news is. If you made a connection to a bulletin board in the States in those days, you had to phone the thing up, and that was a big deal. You know, you were connected all this long way away to another computer.
Yeah, people used to... we used to have file porters who would bring... You know, they would go on certain BBSs every week and bring newsletters and magazines, and they'd put them up on your board, and you'd make them available for everybody else to port around. Not like that anymore. Now we all seem to have equal access to the same material, which, as I said, is good in one sense, but we've lost some aspect of the community in another.
I appreciate.
The other thing too is that there are people that, you know, like sometimes if you were a sysop of a bulletin board, another group would find out about your BBS, and maybe they had some kind of an agenda, and they wanted to become connected in some way, but they didn't have the computer knowledge or the skills to do that. They could approach you and say, "Gee, could we have could we ask you to set up a message area on your BBS for our group?" And most of the time, you'd be only too happy to do it.
That's
and
right.
Now, If a group wants to get on the net and make their presence known and get attract people to them or whatever, they have to either teach themselves HTML and all kinds of stuff about computers so they could build a website and so forth, or they got to find somebody to do it for them. But years ago, it was different because you as a sysop were approached by people all the time, and you usually were only too happy to accommodate.
Steve, some very good thoughts there, and
Yeah, you
yourself have made a fantastic contribution to this whole industry too, and I appreciate you coming on the program.
Oh, thanks very much for having us. And, I'll disconnect now, let others get in, and I'll pick you up on the net.
Thanks very much, Steve. Bye now. That's Steve Matsura, the man. Era code 508. Thank you for being so patient.
Good evening. This is Jerry Barrier from Shrewsbury, Massachusetts.
That's a familiar name. How are you?
Very well. formerly from Pittsburgh, so I knew Willie pretty well. Been at his house a few times, and what I really remember about Willie was that although he was very gruff sometimes on the exterior, he had kind of a almost an intimidating way about him. The guy had the patience of a saint, or at least he did with me, because I started out on his board as a brand new neophyte. His board was probably the first one I was ever on. And I would get on there and make all kinds of mistakes, and I would download things that he knew I had no business downloading and couldn't use. I remember one was once I downloaded this program called Piano Man, which was if I recall correctly, it was a program that might be used by a composer of music or someone very involved, pretty much at a professional level in music. And somehow he knew that I didn't fit that category. And he just very nicely and nonchalantly said to me, and I don't remember if he called me or if it was in a message, but he just said, you know, you might want to start with something a little simpler. That program is pretty complicated. And I also recall when I made a major upgrade from a 1200 baud modem to a 2400 baud, and I had some very elusive parameter that wasn't right. I was having a lot of difficulty getting things to work, and he literally probably spent 2 or 3 hours on the phone with me just going over everything and checking through every possible conceivable thing that could be set wrong and making suggestions, and never showed any lack of patience when it came to things like that. He was a great guy.
God, it's incredible that people have the patience to do that. I had to laugh at the article that we read at the beginning of the program about how he calls himself an assistive technology specialist because he likes the assistive systems specialist because he likes the acronym.
I hadn't heard that, and I missed the beginning of the program. I did hear my old friend Mike Zakin from Pittsburgh, though, and I came on right before he was on the air, so I'm not sure who all else I missed, but I certainly have heard some familiar voices, including Don there.
Hiya, Jerry.
Oh, hi. And this is just, I got an email from Mark Sink alerting me to this program's airing tonight, and I'm glad I did because I really enjoyed it.
Well, it's not just to remember Willie, of course, but it's good to somehow think about how far we've all come, and of course the part that Willie played in getting us there.
Yes, absolutely. I can think of some really useful knowledge that I gained from the bulletin board. For one thing, it was the place where I got most of the programs, probably 90% of the programs that I used when I first started using a computer, that really taught me how to install things and how to load things and all that stuff. And I also remember reading about various activities among people who are blind throughout the world. One of the things I read about first on there was this big sleep study that's still going on in Boston at the Brigham and Women's Hospital. And I remember contacting some people that I read on one of the echoes on there and signing up for it, and wasn't chosen back then, but I did end up participating in the study a couple of years ago after I moved up here. But some really, you know, it was much more than just a fun place to go, and it was serious business at times, and there was an awful lot to be learned from some of the things that were available on there.
You know, you are right. I think that Blink Talk was the first place I learned about melatonin.
Yeah, yes. I've been taking it ever since.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. So I won't hold it, but I just wanted to get on and take my turn to kind of give a little bit of acclamation to Willie, and also to let my voice be heard by all my old friends.
Jerry, that's fantastic, and it's good to hear such a familiar name from the Blink Talk era on the show, and thanks for phoning in.
All right, thank you.
Okay, bye now. We're just about at the end of the program, but we will just invite people who would like to make a contribution to give us a call quickly. The lines are free, so you will get straight on. I know there was a caller there who had a long wait and didn't quite make it. You can get straight in now if you give us a call. Area code 212-812-2800 as we almost draw the program to a close. Area code 212-812-2800. And then when Spiderphone asks you for the conference code, it's 0480-5512. That's 0480-5512. We should also mention, of course, as the article briefly did at the beginning of the show, that ACB honoured Willie in 1993 with an award that they gave him for his contribution to getting blind people online, which I think is a fitting tribute by ACB to such a significant figure.
Jonathan, I just wanted to make one real quick remark. I think when people, if you ask anybody on the street, whether they're sighted or blind, what do they want to do when they buy their computer? What's the first thing they want to do? They'll say they want to get on email and they want to get on the Internet. Well, if you bought a computer back in the mid-80s, sometimes you got it home and you're like, now what do I do with this thing? And I know for myself, there's only so many letters you can write and so many documents you can create in a word processor before this gets old in a hurry and very uninteresting. And I kind of think if it wasn't for echoes like Blink Talk and the modem and being connected to a whole world out there, I might not have stayed a computer user. And you know, Blink Talk had a big part in that.
Let's just take this call who's come back in, I think from area code 504. Hello there.
Hello.
Hi.
This is Walter Siren.
Walter, how fantastic to hear your voice.
Well, I tell you, I almost missed it. I just happened to catch the announcement tonight, and I didn't catch on the first part of it and come in, and I started to call in, but then I couldn't get in at first. I couldn't get this number memorized fast enough. But anyhow, I was back in the old Blink Talk days. Matter of fact, I was running a board for a little while at the local community college for the blind users, or as they say, the visually impaired users, and I ran that for a while, and of course I got on there, and I was on Echo called Able at first, and then Willie started Blink Talk off, and boy, that was really great in those days, except the only problem was you had to wait so long before you get your messages back. It's not like quick today, you know, but still was much more, it was really interesting those days, and I learned a lot. Matter of fact, after the board went down, I set a point up after that and got on one of the boards so I could keep my own echoes. But it was really a lot of fun, and I was really shocked when I heard the message about Willie's death. So.
Yes. I remember seeing lots of messages from both Donna and yourself. And you're right, you know, it used to take a good, sometimes from where I was, 3 or 4 days before you'd get your message back.
Oh, yeah. Well, matter of fact, Donna's in the other room listening to me now. I got up and walked out so she could still listen to this
okay.
while I was talking.
Yeah.
But I hope my cell phone don't drop out because it does sometimes.
No,
matter of fact, my Winamp buffer, I got a new Win 2.7 now up there. My buffer dropped out a couple of times, and I forgot what I'm supposed to do when that thing drops out.
Yeah, it's we've had a few gremlins, especially for Willie this evening, unfortunately, just so that Willie's reminding us, I think, that... you know, technology doesn't always go smoothly, and you have to wing it. That's what you have to do. So it's sort of fitting in a way.
Yeah.
But of course, and you're still in there, Walter, and you're a real veteran of this game. You're moderating the ACBL list these days, and you continue to make contributions all over the place.
As a matter of fact, I'm also supposed to watch the announce list, except I made some filters. The crazy filters, though, is letting my announce. My ACB radio announce messages go into the ACB announce thing. And I thought we had people coming in there, was supposed to be posting in there. But Arlene told me, no, look at it again. There were two of the ACB radio announce things. So anyway, I got to figure out how to separate that so they won't go in there.
Yeah. Well, it's really kind of you to call. And I'm sure there'll be a lot of people who've heard you on their synthesizers over the years who now know what you sound like.
Yeah, and I want to say hello to Don, too. I heard him on there. So.
Hi, Walter.
Yeah, I'll be looking. You going to be there this summer?
Yes, sir.
I hope to be there, too. So, missed you last year. But
we'll be looking for you.
Okay, well, we'll hope to find you this summer. Cause last year, it was kind of a little bad thing. Lola had her knee operated on. She couldn't get around too much, so I wasn't getting around as much as usual. So,
Well, we'll look for you and Donna in Houston.
Yeah, we'll be there.
Good
unless
on.
Anything goes wrong. So, well, I'll say so long, and it's nice that we, you know, everybody's getting to reminisce a little about Willie, and this really was a shock, and he's going to sure be missed by a lot of people, I'm sure.
Sure is. Thanks, Walt.
Okay.
Have a good evening.
Okay, bye.
And you.
And there will probably be as much going education and exchange of information as we've heard here tonight. It's kind of a leg of soup. Who would have thought more than a decade ago that a group that was kind of a couple of people to talk about BBS and their experience, and we'd be meeting every month for more than a decade. And you kind of wonder, you know, looking back at all that, the technology, how it's changed, you know, like how exciting it was to, you know, even contemplate having a CD-ROM, you know, back then, and moving up to your 2400 baud modem, things that you couldn't have, you know, streaming audio, could we have even dreamed of that 10 years? And I wonder where we'll be 10 years from now, or, you know, a decade. Where will we on our GPS-connected wireless handsets? Maybe we'll all be driving cars by then. Who knows?
It has all moved so fast, and you're right. You know, when BlinkLink started, who'd have thought that we'd be connected worldwide and that we could speak to each other in this way about Willie? And that's something that actually I was going to come back to, the fact that the internet in the heyday of the BBS era was really for universities and certain businesses, but predominantly university and government organizations. And the internet people were really resentful about any kind of mass consumer intrusion or commercialization of the internet. It was viciously protected.
That's for sure, and it was considerably more a sterile and more complicated environment than it is today. And certainly there was zero feeling of community on the internet back then. You know, if you knew what you were doing, you got somewhere. But if you didn't, forget about it. There was no help for you.
Mm. Don, any final thoughts on Willie before we close the program?
Well, you know, Mark made a comment of, I wonder where we'll be 10 years from now. And I kind of wonder, you know, technology goes forward in leaps and bounds and it reshapes the world. But, you know, it doesn't do it in the way that there's very few pioneers that you look at that you ever lessen their contribution. The guy that came up with the thought for the computer in the first place, how can you ever say, my God, how outdated that was or how obsolete? You know, there's certain people that make a lasting contribution. And I feel, anyway, that Willie was one of those, because I really think that we had a community that was way ahead of its time as far as connectedness and everything else. And I think a lot of blind people wouldn't be as good a computer users today and wouldn't be as connected and in such a global way if it wasn't for Blink Talk getting them all started and being there to make them have a reason to do it in the first place.
Wonderful, and a great way to end the program. I thank you both for spending so much time with us, and to Gary for being on the program earlier, and also a special thanks to the VIPACE people who've sat through the program and to those who've contributed, and we'll never forget them, and I thank you all for participating.
Thank you, Jonathan.
Bye-bye now. And that just about concludes our program. I'd like to thank our panel and to you who've called in, and also for staying with us through the gremlins, which we had at the beginning of the broadcast. You know, when we go back and check our email on the various blindness lists that we are on, maybe we can just pause and think about those earlier times, even if we weren't a part of them, and think about how far we've come. Think about the fact that there were people, Willie Wilson, one of those key people, who understood that this technology could be harnessed to lessen the isolation of blindness, to bring blind people together so that various blind communities could become a blind global village. It's been a privilege to salute Willie Wilson.
Main menu.
Main menu.
Main menu.
Main menu.
It's time for us to log off for another week. On behalf of all of the Main Menu team, I'm Jonathan Mosen, inviting you to join us again for another Main Menu.